It is Tuesday, January 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions defends his civil rights record before a Senate committee. Turkey's president wants to expand his powers.
His authoritarian nature has already been well demonstrated.
And we'll hear why a journalist promotes messiness as a means to foster creativity. It's all ahead. President-elect Donald Trump's choice for Attorney General, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, defended his civil rights record Tuesday before a congressional hearing.
I was accused in 1986 of failing to protect the voting rights of African Americans by presenting the Perry County case, the voter fraud case, and of condemning civil rights advocates and organizations, and even harboring, amazingly, sympathies for the KKK. These are damnably false charges.
Sessions told the hearing that he understands the history of voting rights for blacks in the United States.
I never declared the NAACP was un-American or that a civil rights attorney was a disgrace to his race. There is nothing I am more proud of than my 14 years of service in the Department of Justice. I love and venerate that great institution. I hold dear its highest ideals. As God gives me the ability, I will work every day to be worthy of the demands of this august office.
But there is significant opposition to his nomination. Democrat Dianne Feinstein of California voiced her skepticism about his selection by President-elect Trump. I'm joined by VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, Sessions is from Alabama, and this is a state, you know, notorious for being a staunch defender of segregation in years past during the 1950s and 60s during the Civil Rights Movement. But Sessions' own nomination has generated controversy on its own.
Yes, and you can tell from the tone of the hearings we've heard both in the newscast and what you've gone over that he enters into this process somewhat in a defensive posture because there has been a lot written about not only his views on race, but some key Supreme Court decisions over the years, abortion and same-sex marriage, and immigration. And I would actually say that seems to be an area that's still raw, according to the early part of the hearing we've seen. He was pressed about what to do about people in the country illegally, especially if they undo some of President Obama's executive order protections. And he was a bit vague on that. On the question of race, this goes back 30 years when he was nominated to be a federal judge, and that ended badly. He's come in with a different attitude now, and he's trying to reassure people that he does not have views that would be considered racist in any ways. The other thing I would note about what we've seen so far today is a couple of differences with President-elect Trump. He's opposed to the idea of a Muslim ban, a flat-out ban on Muslims coming into the country, which Trump himself has kind of reworked a bit, although it's still vague. And the other area here is that he would recuse himself from any consideration of further prosecutions or the investigations pertaining to Hillary Clinton's email controversy. Sessions made some sharply partisan statements during the campaign, so he feels he would need to pull away from that. So I think Sessions is trying to strike a balance, trying to reassure Democrats who have questions about him that he will fundamentally uphold the law. And let's remind everyone, the attorney general job is a key point in the cabinet. And if we are a country of laws and not men and women, it's the attorney general who kind of has the ultimate responsibility to uphold that at any given time.
Well, during today's his appearance at the hearing, Sessions said he abhors the white supremacist Ku Klux Klan. Now, however, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker is going to be testifying against his nomination. That's pretty significant because Mr. Booker is African-American.
A lot of civil rights groups have lined up to criticize the Sessions nomination. There have been protests even before today at his office and at various other venues around Washington. They are trying to mobilize people because of, you know, Sessions' past record, some of the investigations he's been involved with, some of his stances in bills before Congress. Is that enough to derail his nomination? It wouldn't seem so at the moment, particularly where we're not hearing a lot of new allegations. One thing you can say is Sessions does have a controversial past, but a lot of it was vetted, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And actually, Sessions was turned down for that Senate for the judgeship. And he actually used that as a way to revitalize his career, and he actually won a Senate seat from Alabama after he was turned down by the Senate. So he's used that as a kind of personal way to revitalize his career. So there's going to be a lot of questions going forward, but Republicans seem confident they would have the votes to support him, to approve him as Attorney General.
And, of course, there are other nominations coming up.
Yeah, this is the tip of the iceberg. It's a big one, but certainly Rex Tillerson coming up this week as Secretary of State, that's going to get a lot of attention around the world.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Jim. That's VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, also joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, how is this playing up on social media?
Well, you know, a word that I just heard Jim Malone use was raw. Now, he was discussing Senator Sessions' nomination hearings and the feelings that have been sort of associated with it. Well, those feelings are spilling out into social media. It's a little ugly, I will say. One of the biggest top trenders today is probably no surprise, hashtag confirmation hearing. That seems to have kind of been a hashtag that critics of not just Senator Sessions, but the many Trump nominees that are coming up, eight this week, will begin their nomination hearings. These are just a few of the comments, and these are just the ones that I can read. Senator Sessions stated he was not briefed on Russian hacking. He only knows what he knows listening to the media. This is a nominee for Attorney General? Ashley Johnson says, anybody need a good white dude therapy session? The Republicans are currently asking Sessions how he feels. Here's Andrew DiMola. Update. My quote, my racist behavior can be dismissed because I prosecuted four black people, unquote. So really a lot of, I think, anger and, as Jim would say, I think raw feelings about what's happening in the Senate this week and the likelihood that, look, many of these nominees are likely to be confirmed. So people not terribly thrilled about that.
Right. And in other news?
Well, in other news, of course, later tonight, President Obama will be delivering his farewell address. This is not called for in the Constitution, but it's become a real tradition for presidents to take one last chance to address the nation from the position of the presidency. And of course, there is a hashtag for that as well. It seems a lot has coalesced around hashtag Obama legacy, because it's thought that the president will be addressing, perhaps defending his legacy tonight, maybe offering a few words of caution to his successor. But that hashtag Obama legacy, seems to have coalesced with many, many critics of the president. You know how these things in social media can really change by the hour, just sort of floods of pro this or anti that, and it
yes.
can flip in a moment. Now, here's just a few of these under the hashtag Obama legacy. Kate Kendall with the National Center for Lesbian Rights, she tweets out, he was not perfect, but he leaves a legacy that will be hard to beat. Somebody else, Barack Hussein Obama, promised Americans change. Changing U.S. for worse isn't keeping a campaign promise. Here's one last one. Remember when Obama said you could keep your doctor? I do. What a joke. So a lot of people now, as I say, coalescing to criticize the outgoing president on that. And just all over social media, I think this is a week when there's just a lot of exposed nerves, I think, in the political sense.
Yeah.
And we're absolutely seeing that reflected.
A lot of strong feelings out there. Well, mm-hmm. thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The new chief of the United Nations urges preventive diplomacy surge. Islamic State urges Western sympathizers to mount attacks to exhaust enemies. 30 people are dead as Taliban suicide bombers hit Kabul. And as we heard, President Obama bids farewell to the nation tonight. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
One of the most popular resolutions people make with the new year is to lose weight. Many people, unfortunately, tend to give up within a week or so after starting their weight loss program. Dr. David Ludwig from the Harvard Medical School suggests biology and not a lack of willpower may be more responsible for these efforts at weight loss to fail. He advises against eating hyper-processed fast foods and go with whole and natural foods, which are more likely to be efficiently used by the body and brain and doesn't turn into fat as easily. Dr. Ludwig suggests a diet with foods such as whole fruits, vegetables, a good amount of protein, which doesn't necessarily have to be meat, and surprisingly, plenty of high-fat foods. This could include various nuts, nut butters, food prepared with olive oil, and even full-fat dairy products. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about the benefits of messiness. The Turkish parliament has begun debate on legislation that would vastly expand the powers of the president. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a dominant figure in Turkish politics, having served as prime minister from 2003 to 2014, has vowed to increase the powers of the largely ceremonial post of president. Debate on the proposed constitutional amendments is expected to last about 2 weeks, but must clear two ballots and then be put to a voter referendum. Mr. Erdogan's ruling Justice and Development Party, AKP, is believed to have the votes for passage in parliament, along with the Nationalist Party, which also supports the reforms.
Rejimle sorunumuz yok. Sistemin içinde bir partiyiz ve
opposition Republican People's Party lawmaker Özgür Özel said this is a proposal to change the regime. It is a counter-revolution against parliamentarian democracy that has been a part of Turkey for nearly a century. Mr. Erdogan argues Turkey needs a presidential system to avoid weak coalition governments and fend off existential threats to the nation. Critics say it will turn the country into an authoritarian state and erode human rights. The proposals would scrap the office of prime minister and permit the president to appoint governments, dissolve parliament, propose budgets, and declare states of emergency. They would also allow Mr. Erdogan, in theory, to serve 2 5-year terms to 2029. University of San Francisco analyst Stephen Zunis tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the Turkish leader has been an authoritarian figure for some time now.
Through a number of unilateral actions, some supported by the parliament, some not, and then the emergency decrees following the coup attempt this summer. This in many ways would just codify it and make it more constitutionally acceptable. But his authoritarian nature has already been well demonstrated.
Is this turning Turkey away from its secularist past that extends a century?
The bigger danger from Turkey is not the Islam versus secular debate, but one of democracy versus dictatorship. There are plenty of religious Turks that are upset at this increasing authoritarianism and economic policies, which tend to benefit the better off. It's less of a matter of whether Turkey is going to be more like Iran or whether it's going to be more like Putin's Russia.
Mr. Erdogan has argued, and his supporters have argued, that the so-called presidential system that they're considering would bring Turkey into line with countries like France and the U.S.
Well, the difference is in France, you still have a prime minister's post and a strong parliament, which would not be the case with this proposed reform. Similarly, in the United States, we have checks and balances with separate but equal branches. Neither of those things exist in Turkey. And so I think what we'll be seeing instead is increased power in the control of just one man, and that's Erdogan himself.
Well, Stephen, what role did the July 15 attempted coup have in this whole debate?
The coup was the excuse, not the reasons, for this increasing authoritarianism. Erdogan has been clearly wanting to go in this direction for some time. He's getting away with it in part because the traditional secular parties were seen as out of touch with ordinary people and corrupt.
How likely will the voters approve this in a referendum if it is approved by Parliament?
It could be close. Erdogan does have a fair amount of popular support. At the same time, given the control he has exerted over the press and over academic institutions and against civil society organizations, it's highly questionable as to whether such a referendum would indeed be free and fair.
Stephen Zunis at the University of San Francisco. He said while the potential return of authoritarianism to Turkey will not affect its NATO membership, it could spell the end of Turkey's long membership bid to join the European Union. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. Getting more organized is one of the most popular New Year's resolutions among Americans. But as we start 2017, writer and economics journalist Tim Harford doesn't think always being tidy is such a good habit. He argues that we really don't have to organize our desks and computer files or be absolutely precise in planning and preparing for work and life events. Harford's new book tells how disorder and uncertainty can lead to free thinking, creativity, and success. Faiza El-Masri has a story narrated by Faith Lapidus.
One January night in 1975, jazz musician Keith Jarrett held a concert at the Cologne Opera House in Germany. But when the American pianist began playing, he thought the concert would be a failure.
There was a problem with the piano. It was out of tune. It was basically unplayable.
But, says author Tim Harford, Jarrett had no choice but to continue the concert.
With 1,400 people in the audience. And so he sat down, but before he began to play, he said, I'm going to record this concert because I want documentary evidence of what a disaster sounds like. What happens if you don't have the right instrument? But then when he did start to play, it was just beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. And something really magical happened when Keith Jarrett tried to overcome the problems in that piano.
Harford recounts this story to open his book, Messy, The Power of Disorder to Transform Our Lives.
I began the book with that example because I wanted people to think about the situations where they face a very difficult starting point, obstacles, disruptions, things that aren't working out how they planned. And yet somehow, as they adjust and adapt to those obstacles, they find something much better than their original plan. They find some magic in the mess.
Messiness, he explains, is the opposite of tidiness.
What do I mean by tidiness? I mean this habit of making sure that everything has some kind of label or category. Everything is prepared. Everything can be controlled. Sometimes that serves us very well, but often it's actually not helpful in a complex and ambiguous world. So messiness, I think, is this embrace of vagueness and improvisation and ambiguity and disorder that doesn't always work, but I think it works more often than we tend to think.
In fact, improvisation can spark creativity. Harford points to civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. as an example.
As a young man, he would prepare his speeches very carefully. He would prepare those sermons, maybe 15 hours worth of preparation for a 20-minute speech. But it was only later, when he was under pressure, he had no time, and suddenly he found himself giving talks in front of the television cameras, the newspaper crews, much, much bigger audiences than he'd ever faced before. And yet he didn't have his 15 hours to prepare his talk, but he jotted down a couple of notes, and then he went to the church to give the speech. And it was brilliant. It was so powerful. And that came because he stepped away from the preparation and he began to improvise and say what he really thought. The I Have a Dream speech, the most famous speech in the American 20th century, half of that speech was improvised. And I can tell you, it's the half that everybody remembers.
Harford says people tend to find clutter and irregularity disturbing, but don't notice when it benefits them. He says we need to recognize when it's important to be tidy and where it's okay to be messy.
Messiness can be a problem in some circumstances. There are lots of situations where you want a very orderly plan. For example, when you're dealing with financial systems, it's a good idea to be very organized. My financial accounts, for example, they're very tidy because there's a structure to that information. But my desk is often very messy because it's a different kind of problem. But then when I'm doing research for a book, it's chaos. And it should be chaos because it's not causing a problem. It's actually helping me be a better writer.
And chaotic desks are messy because we're dealing with a messy flow of information.
And what those studies find is that very often the messier approach actually works better because the documents are ambiguous. It's not clear where you should file them. So if it's not clear where you should file them, maybe it's better to just keep them where you can see them until more information comes up. People who file their documents too quickly then find that they can't actually find them again. So it's not like looking for your keys or looking for your glasses or looking for your coffee mugs. Looking for an email is really a different problem, and a messy approach can often be more efficient.
Tim Harford says what he would like readers to take away from his book is the idea that resolving to be at least a bit messy can be a good start to the new year. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
That is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From time to time, the United States identifies certain individuals as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. Most often, these are top leaders, or they help finance terrorist organizations. In all cases, these are people who have committed or are deemed to pose a significant risk of committing acts of terrorism. When such people are identified, the U.S. government places their name on the specially designated nationals list. Their assets within U.S. jurisdiction are immediately frozen, and they are locked out of the global financial network. No U.S. citizen or company may conduct business with a designated individual. In this way, the United States disrupts financial support networks for terrorists and terrorist organizations. In early January, the United States Department of State named as a specially designated global terrorist Hamza bin Laden, a son of global terrorist and founder of the Al-Qaeda terror network Osama bin Laden. Hamza bin Laden, born around 1989, was officially named an Al-Qaeda member in a 2015 audio message by Ayman al-Zawahiri, who has headed the terror group since the 2011 death of Osama bin Laden. As part of the same audio message, Hamza bin Laden threatened attacks against the United States as well as Americans abroad. He also called for lone offender attacks against U.S., French, and Israeli interests in Washington, Paris, and Tel Aviv. Similarly, in a message issued in the summer of 2016, Hamza bin Laden called on tribes based in Saudi Arabia to unite with al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen and together to wage war against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The State Department's designation serves notice globally that Hamza bin Laden is actively engaged in terrorism. designations of terrorist individuals and groups, expose and isolate them, and serve as a useful tool to assist or complement the law enforcement actions of other U.S. agencies as well as other governments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.